You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, August 21st, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Bradley Manning is sentenced. More on the NSA revelations. I know it's going to be hard to believe, but they've told another lie. Also, more on Jeffrey Toobin, who has been waving the national security state flag, justifying the detention of Glenn Greenwald's partner, justifying just about everything the government has done in this instance. Apparently, never learned that lesson about stones and glass houses. I will explain. Speaking of handmaiding, midwifing, what is the word I'm looking for? The establishment. Andrew Ross Sorkin has another doozy for you folks. Using the investigation of J.P. Morgan's possible violation of the Foreign Corruption Practices Act as an opportunity to justify the nepotism that surely is part of his own very success that exists in our country. Fascinating insight. And the story that nobody seems to be covering, Fukushima is on the verge of another massive disaster. We've also got some stories about some Obamacare conversions, as it were, to a certain extent, and more. No guests today, folks. Tomorrow on the program, Professor Eddie Gloud will be with us to talk about the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. Should be interesting. We'll look into what the reality of that initial march was and what the march that will be taking place this weekend, how that reflects on that. As I mentioned yesterday, next week we will be running best ofs, although anticipate 1 or 2 days worth of new material. But it's the end of the long summer and the official end of my extended intermittent paternity leave. Because we are contemplating renting out Saul, leasing him out long term. So I won't have those same duties. But let's go to this story of Bradley Manning. As you know, his trial was ongoing. Sentencing was taking place, or the sentencing hearing, for the past week and a half. He was facing, in the end, 60 years in prison for being convicted of 20 offenses, including violations of the Espionage Act, although not aiding and abetting the enemy, and embezzlement of government property. He was also convicted of wrongfully and wantonly causing publication of intelligence belonging to the United States on the Internet, knowing the intelligence would be accessible to the enemy to the prejudice of good order and discipline in the armed forces, or of a nature to bring discredit upon the armed forces. He has been sentenced to 35 years in prison. Just so you know, that is 35 years more than the architects of our torture policy. That is substantially more than those who actually executed and carried out our policy of torture. It is significantly longer than anyone involved in Wall Street. It is longer than many murder convictions. He's 25 years old. He has been in confinement now for almost 1,300 days. He received 112 days sentencing credit when the judge found that he had been subject to what the judge considered unlawful pretrial punishment during his 9 months of confinement at the brig and the Marine Corps base at Quantico. Remind you that the UN Special Rapporteur on Torture found that his confinement nearly amounted to torture, but was certainly cruel and inhuman. My personal opinion that not unlike the Ellsberg case, which you know was not was never completed. There was a mistrial found because of misbehavior by the government in breaking into his psychologist's office, an attempt to get information on him. The fact that Bradley Manning was arguably tortured, inarguably suffered cruel and unusual punishment in his pretrial imprisonment, should be enough to have released him on time served at the very least. The Eighth Amendment of the Constitution reads thusly: the excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Those cruel and unusual punishments have already been inflicted upon Bradley Manning, and the only remedy for that at this point would be for his immediate release. The judge saw it differently. A clemency and parole board can review his case after a year and decide to offer him clemency. People are anticipating that he will serve up to 8 years unless he receives clemency. He has to serve up to 8 years before he's eligible for parole. It's unclear at this point if the Manning defense team will appeal outside of the Army Criminal Courts of Appeals. If the lawyers do decide to, they can attempt to appeal to the Court of Appeals, the Federal Court of Appeals in the of the Armed Forces, and then possibly the Supreme Court. There is good behavior credit. And as Kevin Gastola reports, the government in its sentencing closing argument on August 19th argued, "There is a value in deterrence, Your Honor. This court must send a message to any soldier contemplating stealing classified information on national security crimes that undermine the entire system must be taken seriously. Punish a Private First Class Manning's actions, Your Honor." And My understanding is that the materials that he disseminated, he gave to the press, because certainly in this case, at the very least, regardless of any differing opinions that may be out there, the government was quite explicit in saying it didn't make a difference if he gave it to WikiLeaks or if he gave it to the New York Times. So that was not at issue here. So by disseminating this information, leaking this information, whistleblowing to the press, that information, it's my understanding, would be in the public domain within 35 years. Just a, I guess, an ironic coincidence, perhaps not a coincidence. The point here, though, is that we see a tremendous amount of vindictiveness by the government, and so much of what we've been talking about this week and what was taking place in terms of the national security state and establishment has really been about intimidation. Holding Glenn Greenwald's partner at the airport for 9 hours was completely and nearly exclusively about intimidation. If they wanted those materials that he was holding, they could have taken them quite quickly. They held them for exactly as long, the outer limits of what they are able to detain someone at Heathrow under that Section 7 law in Britain. There's not much else to say about the Bradley Manning trial at this point, but for the fact that it was horribly undercovered by the media, though the media time and time again, whether it was the print journalists or whether it was television, cited the material that he leaked time and time again in news stories. And this is relevant to the extent that when you look upon Bradley Manning and ask the question as to whether or not he was a whistleblower, was the information that he was disseminating of value to the American public, of import to the American public? Was it important for the American public to know the truth about these things? The fact that media organization after media organization after media organization presented this material in the context of news stories, and certainly they don't have a bias towards erring on the side of stuff that is maybe marginally informative when you're talking about hard news. The fact that it was cited, the materials that he leaked, was cited time and time again in analysis of what is happening in Iraq, in analysis of what is happening in Afghanistan, in analysis into what United States foreign policy is. Over and over and over again, on many occasions, I sat on programs on MSNBC where the host or guest would say this information is completely irrelevant, and then the following week, the host would be reading from information that came from those leaks and without even an awareness that that's where it came from. Citing The Guardian, citing without an awareness that The Guardian or The Times or The Post or Der Spiegel or whatever it was had received this information via WikiLeaks from Bradley Manning's leaks. And so that speaks to his role, if not legally, because in the context of him being military personnel and the charges brought against him, but at least morally, a whistleblower. And he certainly exposed crimes and lies being perpetrated by the U.S. government upon its own people. Or crimes, I should say, in the context of waging war, lies in the context of assessing what was happening in Iraq and Afghanistan. And frankly, I don't even know if the media did enough with that information. I would love to hear the justification of why it's in the United States tax dollars are going to lobby to make sure that the Haitian minimum wage is not raised. It's certainly relevant that the U.S. government, the Obama administration, was actively lobbying and pressuring European governments who are attempting to further torture trials against former U.S. officials, lobbying them hard, whether it was in Spain or in Germany. That seems quite relevant and somewhat ironic in the sense that the Obama administration came in with a complete turn-the-page mentality. There's no value in us looking back upon those who committed torture, those who developed a policy of torture, those who spied on this country illegally, without warrant, unequivocally illegally, with no debate illegally. The Obama administration had zero interest in pursuing any of that. Not just zero interest in pursuing any of it, was actively stopping and lobbying and threatening European governments that were beginning to pursue such investigations. And we know that from Bradley Manning's leaks. And in this case, he's the one who's going to go to jail. He's the one who's going to stay in prison for at least 8 years, potentially 30. It's an outrage. It's an outrage. And there is really just shockingly little justification for this. Those of you who are hoping for President Obama to in any way commute his sentence, good luck. I would not hold your breath. That's not going to happen. Maybe tomorrow we'll take a little time to review some of the things that Bradley Manning released. But, you know, it was assessments of what was going on in Iraq, assessments of what was going on in Afghanistan, civilian casualty numbers, which had been classified. Supposedly there was no count, we were told, by the military. Apparently they did have a count. They just didn't want anybody to know what it was. I think it's of great value to the American public to know just how many innocent civilians you've killed with your tax dollars. Certainly people can disagree. I think they're completely wrong.
He also revealed how now I think maybe more is known about drones, but he was one of the first people that put any of that information on the map. He showed how places like the Yemeni government denied their approval of strikes we were conducting in Yemen publicly, even as they secretly supported it. A lot of things he exposed were really important. I don't think that there's like a single area from national security point of view that he didn't shed light on.
Yeah.
Not to mention all the Haiti, and also like going to bat for the pharmaceutical industry and mining interests, and I mean just huge amount of information.
And to this day, the U.S. government has not proven one detrimental impact to our national security because of those leaks. Not one instance. Nothing. 35 years in prison. 35 years in prison after basically going through what is tantamount to torture in pretrial hearings. I mean, so make no mistake about it. There's no question about this as being justice. This is pure, unadulterated intimidation. We're seeing it in the case of Bradley Manning. We're seeing it in the case of digital activists. We're seeing it in the case of journalists. And it's only those journalists whose bread is buttered very much by those that many think that journalism is supposed to be skeptical of, who are speaking out in defense of what the national security state is doing. NBC has reported, and when the story from Bart Gellman came out last week, and we will have him on after vacation. We tried to get him in the past couple of days, but he's quite busy. When the story that Bart Gellman wrote last week, which indicated there were over 2,000, almost nearly 3,000 violations of the law in an audit by the NSA, most of which were supposedly inadvertent, some of which were not, that involved anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 Americans, each one of those violations. And there are all sorts of holes in that audit. When we found out that one of the reactions that I had was like, you know, this is pretty stunning because the president was either told a lie by the NSA when he went out and said, you know, we have checks and balances on this. We don't have problems. We have a way to remediate, fix things when they happen. FISA court judge told the Washington Post last week that no, there is no way to fix it. And it occurred to me that it was quite strange that the president would go out a week and a half knowing that Edward Snowden had these documents. Well, apparently, it's now being reported by the NBC News that the NSA still does not know the full extent of what he took. And that, according to an intelligence community source, is overwhelmed in trying to assess the damage. Now, understand, Marcy Wheeler makes this point. It's a piece in The Atlantic, the same theme. We have seen time and time again where the NSA has come out and said, we are completely in control of what we're doing. Last Friday, the NSA's compliance director, John DeLong, assured journalists that the violations the NSA reported in 2012 were minuscule. For the past several months, various intelligence agencies have assured Congress and the public that it keeps U.S. person data very carefully guarded, so only authorized people can access it. How is it possible that the NSA can say with confidence that they keep information that they have collected on Americans very protected? We know exactly what we have, what's American and not American, once we store it in our databases. We keep it, there's a firewall there, we know who is assessing it and whatnot, but they cannot even come close to assessing what Edward Snowden walked away with. They have created such a monstrosity that they have no capacity whatsoever to measure whether or not they're violating people's rights, to measure who has access to what. They're just amassing massive amounts of data. This is the Keystone totalitarians. It's stunning. There is no way. They don't even know. Listen to the NSA director Keith Alexander have assured the public that the government knows the scope of the damage, but two separate sources briefed on the matter told NBC News that the NSA has been able to determine how many documents he took and what they are.
Surprise, surprise.
Keith Alexander, in July. Speaking to a hacker conference. The assumption is our people are just out there wheeling and dealing. Nothing could be further from the truth. We have tremendous oversight over these programs. We can audit the actions of our people 100%, and we do that.
Don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining.
If they can audit the actions of their people 100%, then they would surely not be overwhelmed and completely in the dark as to what Edward Snowden walked away with. NSA had poor data compartmentalization, said the sources, allowing Snowden, who was a system administrator, to roam freely across wide areas. By using a thin client computer, he remotely accessed the NSA data from his base in Hawaii. Appearing at the Aspen Security Forum on July 18th, as I guess Director Alexander, NSA Director Alexander, was on a tour, he responded yes when NBC News correspondent Pete Williams asked, "Do you feel you know what Snowden got?" Yes. Was it a lot? Alexander again. Yes. On Tuesday, yesterday of this week, NSA spokesperson Vaney Vines said Alexander's Aspen answer was not intended to be as a, quote, a hard, we know everything completely answer to Williams' question. He did not say the assessment had been completed in absolute terms. The director answered a question about his general sense. Let me ask you,
Yes.
You know, we don't even seem to have NSA directors or heads of the Directorate of National Intelligence who even have the capacity to lie well. How many times do these guys have to get caught in lies? These are literally like watching two drowning men. It's stunning. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal out with a piece saying that the National Security Agency's spying tools extend deep into the domestic U.S. telecommunications infrastructure. They have access, in conjunction with the telecommunications company, the NSA has built a system that can reach deep into the U.S. internet backbone and cover 75% of traffic in the country, including not only metadata, but the content of online communications. Fun fact. The NSA data center in Bluffdale, Utah, that they are building, is going to require nearly 1.7 million gallons of water per day to operate and keep their computers and servers cool. You don't need $1.7 million gallons of water a day to keep servers and computers that can hold metadata cool. You need that much water to keep servers and computers and hard drives that are going to contain the contents of everything they access. Not just the metadata, but the content. I remember when I did Who's the Caboose? And for 45 minutes of video, I think you needed a hard drive about the size of what the old VCRs look like. Can't remember exactly what it was. Maybe 8 gig for 45 minutes of video. I can't remember. And now, of course, that can fit in. I can get 5 times that on a phone. What they're building there is to hold content, not metadata. Metadata is just text. It's a cool idea if you're talking about like a time capsule.
Maybe they'll come with, dude, you don't understand. We're just trying to build the world's most awesome time capsule.
It's going to be sweet. I mean, the implications of the NSA not knowing what Snowden had access to is just mind-blowing. First off, what if Edward Snowden had decided, I'm not going to abscond with all this information. I'm just going to keep it, and I'm going to sort through it, and I'm going to pick and choose who in the U.S. government I'm going to F with. Or why even the U.S. government? Surely there must be some wealthy politician doing something who's willing to fund a another level on my house in Hawaii. Surely there must be a business person who runs a company for whom $50,000 one-off for a piece of information is far worth it. I mean, how would the NSA even know at this point? If they can't retrace what he did 2 months out, 3 months out, how would they ever find it if they were never even notified that he had done something?
Take an even more mundane example of someone who doesn't have any power. What if not Edward Snowden? What if some random contractor is a stalker, wants to follow some girl?
What protection
does she even have to begin with?
Of course. But the point is that they can't even find this information when they're told it's happened. Someone has stolen your stuff. And you've been told someone's stolen your stuff and you still can't figure out what's been stolen? What if nobody told you that it was stolen? What if nobody made a show and went to a reporter and said, I'm going to do a short, an hour-long interview and put my my video online and become an international story for weeks? What if that didn't happen? What if he just grabbed that information? What if he just grabbed that information and quietly sold it to the Russians and Chinese?
What's to say that hasn't already happened?
Maybe the reason why Edward Snowden can say the Russians and the Chinese haven't gotten my information is because they don't need to.
It is kind of interesting how they have no interest in what he's got.
Well, look, we don't know. But the point is, if the NSA cannot determine what has been stolen when they're aware there's been a theft, then how can they determine what's been stolen when they're not aware there's been a theft? And yesterday I spent some time going through Jeffrey Toobin's piece yesterday in the Better Half. I want to touch on it again. So members, once again, members indulge me here. As you've heard this already, freebies, if you ever run into a Majority Report member, you should be thanking them. I want to just read how Toobin's starts off his piece. That becomes relevant with another story to dealing with Toobin himself, but I want to deal with the piece first. He started off by writing, the assassinations of Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert F. Kennedy led directly to the passage of a historic law, the Gun Control Act of 1968. Does that change your view of the assassinations? Should we be grateful for the deaths of these two men? Of course not. That's lunatic logic, but the same reasoning is now being applied to the actions of Edward Snowden. the argument he's making here is that just because something good came of a of an act does not necessarily mean that act in and of itself is good. But that is the least profound and most irrelevant statement one could make in this instance. I could also argue that just because something good came from something bad in one instance, that doesn't mean that that has no implications. The analogy between what Edward Snowden did and the assassination of political leaders, rather different. And the fact that we have story after story after story that are considered groundbreaking stories that emanate from these leaks, I think goes to show whether or not there is reform at this point, but his act was based not in trying to kill someone, not in trying to destroy the hopes of the civil rights movement, not in to prevent or destabilize a political system, but rather to inform the public of stuff that obviously is vitally important, so much so that based upon the leaks that Bart Gellman reported on last week, Senator Leahy called for a new Senate investigation, that we're seeing dozens, or I should say nearly a dozen new pieces of legislation introduced to curb what the NSA is doing. The idea that he would draw this parallel is ridiculous. It's demented. It is demented. I'm not going to read the rest of this piece. I went through that yesterday. But one part, he says, what are the actual dollar costs of Snowden's disclosures? Because of Snowden's disclosures, the government will almost certainly have to spend billions of dollars. Thousands of people have to spend hours and hours reworking our procedures. This is all because a 30-year-old self-appointed arbiter of propriety decided to break the law and disclose what he had sworn to protect. First off, how many billions and billions and billions of dollars are we spending now to create and support this national security state that can't even tell when its stuff's been stolen? After it's been told it's been stolen, can't even tell what it is. When Thomas Drake leaked and blew the whistle on what was going on with an NSA boondoggle brought in to replace Thin Reed, I think it was called. When he went to the special investigator for the NSA, when he went to Congress, he saved this country billions of dollars, but he was then prosecuted under the Espionage Act for it. Jeffrey Toobin has no idea how much money is being wasted, any more than I do. He's talking out of his arse here. And I'll tell you what, with the revelations, they were public apparently, but they've been brought up by Kevin Gastola at Fire Dog Lake. This Jeffrey Toobin piece has the same feel as those right-wing conservative Republicans who get on the floor of the Senate, the House 10 years ago, and talk about how dangerous it would be for gays in the military. And then they're found to be posting stuff on Craigslist, trolling for guys. It has that same quality, and this explains why. Kevin Gastola has pulled quotes from Michael Isikoff's book, Uncovering Clinton, A Reporter's Story. He described how Jeffrey Toobin was caught, quote, having absconded with large loads of classified and grand jury related documents from the office of Iran-Contra Independent Counsel Lawrence Welsh in 1991. Quote, Toobin, it turned out, had been using his tenure in Welsh's office to secretly prepare a tell-all book about the Iran-Contra case. The privileged documents, along with meticulously kept private diary, in which young Toobin, sort of a proto-Linda Tripp, had been documenting private conversations with his unsuspecting colleagues, were to become his prime bait to snare a book deal. Walsh at one point even considered pressing for Tubin's indictment. Walsh's memoir on the Iran-Contra investigation entitled Firewall. More details on Tubin's act. During our negotiations over the timing of the book's publication, Tubin and his publisher surprised us with a preemptive suit to enjoin me from interfering with the publication or punishing Tubin for having stolen hundreds of documents, some of them classified, and for exposing privileged information and material related to the grand jury proceedings. I could understand a young lawyer wanting to keep copies of his own work, but not copying material from the general files or the personal files of others. This is just stunning. John P. McKenzie, the New York Times, wrote an editorial with the concluding paragraph. Lawyers often write self-praising books, but they don't usually betray clients or bosses and spill secrets that aren't theirs to tell. Mr. Tubin is no First Amendment hero, but an opportunistic practitioner who searched for contract loopholes while his colleagues focused on Iran-Contra. Tubin apparently went on to quit his role as a federal prosecutor in Brooklyn, according to Isikoff, because he either feared dismissal or disgrace, or simply wanted to move on. Jeffrey Tubin, now, he's not in the military, so he wouldn't have been court-martialed, but if Tubin received a 35-year sentence, he'd be just finishing it off in a couple of years.
Also, he was around the age of 30 when he did this. And has his age has been a factor that he's brought up a lot.
Oh, yes. We've heard him say, this 30-year-old. He's now referred to Glenn Greenwald's partner, who was flying between Poitras and Greenwald to deliver materials from Poitras to Greenwald. We're not clear on what exactly the material was. We don't know if it was the documents that Snowden had, or if it was simply interviews with Snowden. We do know that Miranda was flying on the Guardian's dime, so was at least in part functioning on the behalf of a journalistic enterprise. Even if he was a courier, does anybody doubt that if Jeffrey Tubin was ever working on something that was sensitive and gave it to a courier, that courier was followed and stopped, that he would not be outraged that his journalism was being interfered with? It's just stunning. What's that?
He called him a drug mule.
He called him a mule.
I missed that.
He called him a mule on CNN. He said this guy could be holding the keys for a nuclear launch, for all we know. Which, of course, is also
in the same way he could be.
Well, yes.
Like, what does
we
that
don't know
mean?
That Jeffrey Tubin couldn't be either. But the point is, also that's also like cartoon stuff.
It's a bit racist there too.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, he's from South America.
Well, I don't think that's the point. I mean, I think the point is that Jeffrey Tubin is trying to argue that they didn't know what he had. And Glenn Greenwald brings up a good point insofar as, like, how is it that they know that Miranda was carrying anything? They've obviously been spying on Miranda. Is that really, are we really okay with that now? I'm going to spy on the journalists. Andrew Basevich had a piece. To whom do Army privates and intelligence contractors owe their loyalty? To state or to country? To the national security apparatus that employs them or to the people that apparatus is said to protect? Those who speak for that apparatus, preeminently the president and Jeffrey Tubin, I added that part, assert that the interests of the state and the interests of the country are indistinguishable. But what if the interests of the state do not automatically align with those of the country? In that event, protecting the homeland serves as something as a smokescreen. Behind it, the state pursues its own agenda. In doing so, it stealthily but inexorably accumulates power, privilege, and prerogatives. In the eyes of the state, Manning and Snowden, and others who may carry on their work, can never be other than traitors. Whether the country eventually views them as patriots depends on what Americans do with the opportunity these two men have handed us. That's really the point. We're going to head into the better half of the program. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. Folks, if you can, if you have the financial means to support this program, please become a member today at majority.fm. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment.